Okay, Katie, what's the topic today?
I found a really cool article that was written by a woman named Adrienne McLean. She's film professor at University of Dallas.
What is this article?
The article is called Media Effects, Marshall McLuhan, Television Culture, and the X-Files. It was written by Adrienne McLean. She's a professor.
What, 20 years ago? 20 years ago?
It would have been 96, so yeah, 18 years ago.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds perfect.
Yeah, it was. I really enjoyed it. I'm not going to talk about my TV show. However, one thing that I noticed just this week is that in learning how to screenwrite, there's a technique that you use where you're not allowed to give any emotion or any backstory in the narrative. You're only allowed to describe what the camera can see. It's a really different way of writing than what I'm used to. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And it's very intentional. It's supposed to create a space between the viewer and the show so that all the emotion and the backstory is implied, but you never say what it is. And we do that in regular creative writing. It's called show, don't tell. It's a basic literary technique, but they take it even further in television. And I realized once I was learning to do this with the man who's teaching me, because he's making me do everything, because if I get inside the writer's room and I can't perform even though I had the idea, that's not going to help. So he's been teaching me on the fly. I realized that not only is television cool, but the programming, even though it doesn't matter, even though it's the medium itself that matters, the programming is also intentionally cool. So I've been learning how to write coolly.
Right.
And so I wanted to find an article that explored that, and lo and behold, this woman, Adrienne McLean, explores exactly that and uses some of Marshall's probe to make her point. I thought it was an excellent article. I don't think it's as sophisticated as the master's thesis that we found by the man who's responsible for the screenplay for Game of Thrones, but still very cool to see someone talking about this related to TV and bringing McLuhan in it, not from a screenwriting teaching point of view, but from a film analysis point of view. So I thought we could talk about that.
Yes. No, it sounds good. Remember, X-Files was about you know, me and Carolyn. That was the first Xenarchrony in the 90s. Jim up in Toronto called me in New York. We'd only been there a few months and got a message on my answering machine in Manhattan. Bob, have you seen X-Files? And I said to myself, nope. And he said, it's your stuff. Why, all you did on CKLN, it's all a big TV show. And they thought I was, you know, off the grid with the CKLN show. They never would think that TV would do anything close to what me and Bob Marshall were doing. But this was the beginning of the pre-play before the Internet in 95. This is 93. So, yes, we just as Dale Cooper and who mentioned it? What is that called? Yeah, Twin Peaks anticipates Zion. David Lynch anticipates Zion. X-Files did. Okay, so let's see what she says. She connects X-Files to McLuhan?
She does. So she first starts out in the beginning of the article and talks about the fact that X-Files, and this is a play on word, X-Files, get it?
Right.
One who loves X-Files. Okay. X-Files were among the first to use cyberspace to create their own virtual fan culture and specialized interest groups. At the time of the writing of this article, there were nearly 500 websites devoted to the X-Files. And so this has resulted in just something to note for considerable journalistic and scholarly attention. So she's talking about this is the first time that it's so cool that people are even interacting with the show on the Internet outside of the show, which was very cool.
Well, that's a general prediction. Hey, that's a general prediction. McLuhan said the electronic media and digital media would include more, more and more audience participation, more and more audience participation. And I am back in 1980, McLuhan predicted in McLean's magazine New Year's article saying that the audience in sports would take over more and more. And then that led to the Wave and all that Jumbotron stuff, and Pamela Anderson was discovered. You know, they show the crowd. So, you know, over the last 20 years, the audience has taken over, and that's probably why you got George Bush II as a president. He was a perfect, you know, a beer-drinking sports watcher you would see in a beer commercial, right? So he reflected the audience becoming in the act. So let's see if she picks up on that, this internet participation.
Okay. All right. She also talks about just the show itself and how it lends itself to part of a continuing cultural dialogue about law and order, freedom and safety, right and wrong, truth and falsity during a period of PMT, or premillennial tension. So I thought that was kind of cool, too, because she's kind of setting the stage for ION, even though she doesn't know that she's doing that. That's what you and Carol are doing. That's what Mulder and Scully are doing. It's all this premillennial tension. Everybody wants to get happy or get the fuck out. They want to ascend or have the planet blow up. Or
they want a conclusion. They want a conclusion of the last 1,000 years, you know, the Y2K, the big punchline on January 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
So then she says that she's thinking about the X-Files while she's teaching a course on visual culture, and she's reading some of the recently reissued works of Marshall McLuhan, who she calls a media critic, which is cute.
Right.
Because
yeah,
he's not really
media
a media critic, but that's okay.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
what she thinks he is, so that's fine.
But she's new because she's reading him. It's all new to her.
Right. She's a cool lady. She's like, her prose is beautiful. Her vocabulary is huge. And I did have a couple of emails with her this week, and she's very dry and funny. I'm going to send her links to the show. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe she'll come on. Who knows?
Yeah. If she wants to talk, she could even talk to McLuhan. We'll bring McLuhan through ION. She can talk to McLuhan.
Wouldn't that be cool? Yeah. And on a side note, before we move on, I'm just going to tangent for a second. She also wrote an article about ballerina imagery in film and how it contributes to eating disorders. And I thought that was even another neat little thing, because the protagonist in my TV show is bulimic.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
So yeah. That's one of the things that the drops are going to help her with. But it's just kind of cool that she had both pieces, the McLuhan piece and the eating disorder piece.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she gets both of those. So then she talks about the current resurgence of interest in McLuhan and says, McLuhan does seem to be driven less by an interest in his theorizing than by his apparent ability to predict the electronic future. Very cool that he saw
that. Say that again. McLuhan's what?
I'll read the sentence. The current resurgence of interest in McLuhan does seem to be driven less by an interest in his theorizing than by his apparent ability to predict the electronic future. So she's got half of it right there, that he's predicting the electronic future. He's not a theorist. He was never a theorist.
Right, but what she means by theorist would, she hasn't got great terms, but you could adapt it. McLuhan's writing was a pattern recognition. It's not so important that he predicted the internet. It's how he sees the pattern anticipated by, the radical modernists, Lewis and Joyce and these people. They anticipated this, the third Copernican revolution, and Don Steele's books go into that. So the, quote, theory is the more important part of Marshall's, that he could read the culture across the across the range of all activities and show the common denominators of what was coming. So it's the effects he predicted, not the particular technology, though that was included, but that's minor. So the engineers like McLuhan for predicting actual technology, but we as citizens should be more interested in the sociological effects and the cross-cultural effects.
She's
sort of right with what she's saying.
She is. I was really impressed with this. In a few pages, we'll get to it. I don't know the exact words, but she quotes Arthur Croker, too. Brings him into the conversation. Really cool. So then I'll just read the rest of this. The emergence of the Internet and its role in the formation of a new global village and the rise of home computers, video recorders, cable and satellite networks, cellular phones, and other technologies of electronic communication and, by implication, surveillance, have given McLuhan validity as a prophet of the condition that cultural critics variously describe as postmodernism or postmodernity, which is basically what you just said.
Yeah.
What was once dismissed as typical McLuhan jeremiad is now accepted as the common denominator of our collective lives. So that as you
know, you said jeremiad. That means Luddite anti-technology. That's what the word you said was jeremiad.
I thought they meant a list of complaints, like a litany of complaints.
Yeah, Jeremiah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's not, McLuhan was not limited to that. So he was not a Jeremiah-er. He actually left that out. He would try to say, don't discuss value judgments, just talk technically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's strange that some people would think that McLuhan did a Jeremiah. But that image started to surface in the early 90s. Which was not the image of McLuhan in the 60s. And remember, McLuhan being a quadriphenic, everybody's projecting anything on him. You know, he's a Rorschach inkblot.
Right.
Which is a very...
Well, and
I
thought that a little bit in the beginning. I mean, my first talk with you back in November was me talking, supposedly reading the Gutenberg Galaxy so I could figure out what that meant to an author of books when books are being obsolete. And I didn't even understand what obsolete meant in that context. So I can see how she would think that.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought he was down on books. I was afraid to tell you I was writing a book. And before, I'd never give it up, and now I don't want to write a book anymore, and you couldn't make me go back.
You know, just that point, McLuhan used to write in the 50s or ask, what's the role of books? And he decided that Finnegan's Wake was the only book worth noticing, and then he tried to just translate and apply Finnegan's Wake. So there was a book that would be useful he wasn't against books. He just said most books were useless, but Finnegan's Wake was the best if you required a book experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then she says that, as he wrote in 1967, the electronic media are so pervasive in their personal, political, economic, aesthetic, psychological, moral, ethical, and social consequences that they leave no part of us untouched, unaffected, or unaltered. So that was cool. Then she goes on and kind of tells what the goal of the paper is. And she says, the connection that I make between McLuhan and the X-Files is at once arbitrary. They have nothing historically to do with one another, and yet I choose to connect them. And theoretically sound. I believe that McLuhan's work on media effects does help to understand the X-Files, and by implication, other popular television shows, both as representations of a precise cultural moment as links to past television practice. This postmodern posture, however, is one which McLuhan himself regularly employed in his search to understand the effects of a media form like television on the culture, which had called it into being. And I thought that was really neat, too, that she put that in those terms. The culture which had called it into being, the culture called television into being, you called ion into being, this idea that as media...
And you know what ion says about that? Ion says radio, people crane to see something when they watched the radio, sat around and stared at the radio. They were, and Ion says that popped in sight, you know, something electronic that they could see as well as hear, the yearning, the yearning. Okay, carry on.
Okay. The aphorisms, which have come down to us as McLuhan's theories, were in fact actually his probes. The tentative statements or keywords that McLuhan repeated, recast, revised, and stretched in order to investigate meaning. Probes are thus drills, in the words of McLuhan. Biographer W. Terence Gordon that helps McLuhan to blast through what Arthur Croker calls the deep invisible assumptions, the silent structural rules of the technology within which we are situated and which has taken us over.
Good statement. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then she talks about the point of his probes are not to finish the hole that the drill makes. Rather, it's what the drill churns up that matters.
Yeah, they're questions. They're not necessarily answers. And he used to go around saying, everybody seems to be not disagreeing when I point out the medium's the message. Why is that? Why are people thinking the medium is the message? That's what he wrote once.
Mm-hmm.
See, he wasn't making a statement that everybody had to match in a platitude, as Ayn would say. he was interested in the vicissitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And then
which is what I meant by him not being a theorist. Like, he didn't draw conclusions. And it wasn't because he kept evolving, necessarily. It's because it was never his goal to draw conclusions.
Right. He wanted to...
Everything
he
was
said,
fluid.
Yeah, in the page, the one pager that was on top of the original Understanding Media archetype, media Understanding Media manuscript, he said, "I am presenting speech as an archetype." He was not only retrieving the value of the book, he was retrieving the value of speaking and having something to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like all the other humans were speechless before the global theater of the 60s. I mean, they all
mm-hmm.
started yelling, screaming, but they had no no usefulness in what they were saying. McLuhan was actually saying stuff that we still recognize are valid today, or valuable. So
mm-hmm.
he had the,
mm-hmm.
the perfect pitch in spoken language.
Mm-hmm. He did. Oh, that PC page for us last week was amazing.
What did you just say?
That little piece that you played for us about...
Oh, yeah, 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 the role of your job. Your job in the future is knowing. Yeah, that's great.
Loved it. And let me just throw in here, too, that in Understanding Media, television is called the timid giant.
Yes.
Will you speak to that? Why did you call it the timid giant?
It's a cool medium.
Is it a little Lilliputian imagery?
No,
yeah,
take radio, the tribal drum. Everybody starts getting revved up and starts attacking each other's nations, whereas TV was changing everything but very subtly and was a cool medium. It wasn't making it obvious what it was doing to people.
Mm.
It was cool. It was
synesthesia.
Synesthesia. Yes, television was presenting synesthesia. That's cool. If you start having synesthesia, you're going to stand back and be cool a bit. You're going to say, where's this leading? So
mm-hmm.
television was creating this cooling effect, multiple levels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, carry on quick before Ian starts, you know, thinking he's got...
It's on now.
No. Let us finish a bit. Finish the paper. I think you would find this paper enjoyable, Ian. So,
we know.
Enjoyable.
We're going to make a night you won't remember.
Okay, quick, Katie, some more points.
Then she talks about Marshall's view on TV. So she's going to say McLuhan's aspects of the X-Files. It's literalization of some of McLuhan's most famous speculations. That television is a cool medium which thrives on cool characters and involves the casual participation of all the senses, that it substitutes a vague insight for a real point of view, and that it produces a collective anxiety which is dominated by a free-floating terror in which everybody is so profoundly involved with everybody else that nobody can really imagine what private guilt can be anymore. So that's what she's going to talk about.
She's saying the X-Files. She's going to give examples of that. It sounds like a lot of TV shows today, but she's saying the X-Files was a radical change.
Yes, X-Files
TV
was
program.
First.
Yeah, give us some examples.
Let me just say this next, because this is kind of a figure ground piece. So now she's talking, John Taylor Caldwell has identified a trend, a counter-strategy in American broadcast programming since the 1980s, which he calls televisuality, that not only foregrounds a visually based mythology framework and aesthetic based on extreme self-consciousness of style, but often utilizes self-contained and volatile narrative and fantasy worlds. Televisuality is both a pretext for economic intervention and a programming tool used to flaunt and throw around ontological distinctions, history/text, news/film, reality/fiction. Televisuality employs style to attract faltering networks, the discriminating viewers who belong to the 18 to 49 demographic that is so important to advertisers. In other words, relations of subordination or opposition might be easily structured into the plot of the X-Files, both as authorial expression and as a marketing strategy, and this would not be remarkable. So she's saying that what she just described suggests that televisuality bears a startling resemblance to McLuhan's claims about the hybrid nature of television and its effects on our minds and bodies. to McLuhan, television was obviously an integral medium, forcing interaction among components of experience which have long been separate and scattered. So its ability to link instantaneously, simultaneously, and non-linearly anything with anything else, television restructures us into beings whose sense of the world is based on a discarnate involvement with process. TV
okay,
bodies.
Okay, now, carry on. And anybody?
Okay. Isn't that the TV body?
Anybody? Yeah, no, what the pattern that comes to me is the Internet is sneaking up on people. You know, people
okay.
are starting to be in the BBSs, and this is 93. And so that means the old environment, when it was invisible, not knowable, that was the 50s and 60s and 70s, TV was not understood. Now that it's obsolete, the ground characteristics, the not noticed characteristics of television, show up as a figure, and she's wisely pointing out that X-Files is showing what the hidden ground of TV was all along, but nobody
mm-hmm.
noticed that because it was all hot programming on TV, the boring program from the, you know, the 60s to the 90s, the reason I didn't watch TV. Now the cool factors of television are becoming figure. So that means, and we see if she doesn't understand that to predict that there's a new medium afoot because the hidden characteristics of TV have now become figure in X-Files. That was
mm-hmm.
the pattern I was talking last week. Or maybe it was on Ginny's
okay.
show. Maybe it was on Ginny's show Wednesday. Yeah, I said that. Carry on your point there. More
okay.
descriptions of fringe of X-Files.
Okay, she's still laying out her stuff, her McLuhan stuff, then she's going to get to the examples. I wanted to read this one part because it was cool. Television knows just what we know, so that it often serves as a substitute for lived experience or translates reality for us. Television's own hidden ground has become the content of the medium itself.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying.
Yeah, yeah, that's what
yeah,
she
yeah.
too.
So she
loved
gets
it.
That. Yeah, yeah.
She does.
Yeah.
And then that reminded me, there was a statement that I had read in a Stephen King book called On Writing that I read just for my own writing years ago.
Yeah.
And he talks about writing being psychic activity. And I thought that fit in with that, too. And it makes sense with the screenwriting that I've done here lately. You really do have to count on that the viewer is going to fill it in. If you don't let them fill it in, then they'll turn the channel because it's
yes.
that cool.
Yeah. That's the participation mystique.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand that it was crafted like that until now. And it is so fun to write that way.
Yeah.
Just so rich. So then she goes on to say, what matters here is McLuhan's insistence on the meaning of television's ubiquity, its usurpation of our psychic processes, and its potential to leave us in an exhausted slump of sensory overload. Television is at once a medium that requires audience participation and one which creates numbness and dulls our perceptions as well. This is what McLuhan describes as the paradoxical feature of the cool TV medium. It involves
yeah.
us in moving depth, but does not excite, agitate, or arouse.
Yeah.
So
she got the whole what?
I was going to say the sensorium piece, which people sometimes miss in McLuhan.
Right. Yeah, well, she's reading McLuhan in the McLuhan revival caused by Wired magazine, and she's reading enough to notice some of the jargon and getting it right. But she's not noticing, unless she later says it, that all this has become figure because there's a new medium, the Internet, which is sneaking up on everybody in the period she's writing, 95, 96. And today, these are characteristics of Ion. Ion is the guff as art form, come forth to allow people to engage consciously with the guff. Or what it was
mm-hmm.
Before. So this is Ion is acting out of this pattern later. And Ion's a very involving medium. He allows you to engage, and he interrupts, he stops, he doesn't answer questions. He's a master of a cool effect on people.
Mm-hmm. And he's left me in a stupor, in a torpor.
Yeah, yeah. He
actually.
Can numb. He amputates.
Catatonic
numb.
Torpor. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
It's true.
Okay. More
so like.
Oh, someone speak. Oh, here comes Susanna. Yes.
I was just going to ask that if TV back before the Internet, people regarded everything they saw as, well, if it's on TV, it's real or it's
yep.
true. And now the internet has supplanted that, so everything on the internet is real and true, and they're not looking at TV. They look at TV as more solely entertainment.
No, I would say the internet.
Do you think that's a true statement?
No, internet has made fantasy acceptable, and people don't care whether something is true or not. They just want to connect. Now, that's why everybody stares at their iPhone, because the internet fragments everybody into their matrix tube. There's no human chemical body species left, so there's no community. So the younger kids came along and started fanatically texting to hope there is still community. So it's a whole different situation with the internet.
Bob?
Yes. Oh, is that someone else want to speak?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Who's
Bob?
That, Katie?
No, it's Rochelle.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Rochelle.
Kate, there was a web series that that plays with this material pretty well. I can't remember the name of it. I'll try and look it up. But it was something. It was like moms and kids, and
yeah.
the web developers connected very strongly with their community, and people would write in things that had happened, and the writers would take that material and turn it into episodes. So it was a really, really strong community that was built around the whole show. And then, of course, you know, the big guys get interested, and they option the show and hire a bunch of recognizable actors instead of the women that were starring in the web series. I think they might have kept one or something. And
yeah.
The show was failed because it no longer connected to the audience or the community.
Yeah, and that's part of the decentralizing of the chip body. People just want to connect. They're not interested in the iconography of a centralized star system of the TV world, which is even a weaker star system than the old movie world. But, yeah, they are not interested in being translated into some central zone of mainstream success or something. It's hyper-participational.
Yeah.
Very, extremely. Low definition. They're not even participating in any material levels. They're just engaged as digital dangling ganglia. You know, because they're not a community, they're not a chemical body community, they are something that shares a connecting. It's like the dupes here, the INets. They chat away on the internet, you know, on the chat line, deeply involved with each other's instant statements. They don't even have time to think about what they did say, type 10 minutes ago. So it's a non-compassmentous participation. And then the Madison Avenue guys come in and try to make it knowable, try to make it like it arrived at somewhere. So, oh, okay, this is good enough to be marketed on the big level. But the bigger level was no longer there. Everybody was, what you're describing in the web TV was happening in chat rooms all over the place, whether they were being made into TV shows or not. You know what I mean? It was the fragmentation of the internet. It's just that. These guys, your guys, figured out a way to make a local TV translation for the TV body.
Hey, Bob, but just back to my point real quick. I just, specifically with the X-Files, it seems like there are people that are always constantly looking for a truth or a knowing or something, information.
An answer. They're looking for a reason. Yeah. They're looking for a reason. Ian says it's a big deal, big desire.
Right, and that was my point with TV. They'd look for a series that they thought was embedded with information and
yeah.
blah, blah, blah. And then now it's the internet and all these internet sites where they're looking for information. They think they can find the truth or the answer through all these forums or websites or whatever. So that was my point in suggesting that the internet has supplanted the TV
right.
landscape for that.
Yeah, McLuhan said that television it was an extension of the unconscious, so that advertising and the corporations used the unconscious to market the content. And so there was a great movement towards a collective consciousness. Then when the internet came in, which has slightly a visual bias because you're looking at data, at least what 1.0, looking for the top data, that was suppressed. And that brings in the conspiracy, the meme that the internet is nothing but conspiracy theories. The suppression of information was the appeal of the internet. not the retrieval of the tribal and pre-tribal unconscious that happened in the 50s and 60s. So it's a, within the collective consciousness, the internet means a collective consciousness, probably Reagan era is the beginning of the collective consciousness. And then now, we don't need to listen to Wolf Blitzer. We want to find out what my neighbor, or what some guy who was in NASA. That's the big UFO disclosure thing that Stephen Greer does or started to do. All these disclosures was what people thought they'd get on the internet. It actually retrieved literate information types of answers, but that was not really the dynamism. It flipped into something else. Everybody just started editing their own space.
And
broadcasting, they started to broadcast their archive. It wasn't looking. Alex Jones is still trying to establish a standard, disclose a standard archive that's hidden somewhere, right? But the, now people aren't doing that. They're just declaring their archive. and my chart predicted that. My chart was a collection of, it was actually the best probers around, but also was my personal archive, is the content of the Tiny Note chart. You know, McLuhan, Zappa, Croker, LaRouche, Mae Brussel, Beater, Thompson, Garrett Dean, those are the stuff I was playing on the radio. That was my archive, and I said the internet is going to allow everybody to become their own archivist. I just claimed that my archive was the most significant archive and was proven true eventually.
So the internet dismantled the collective.
That's right. It canceled the collective. And that's web 1.0. Web 2.0 was so more extreme than web 1.0, and everybody started saying, oh, my God, I better keep my iPhone on and keep texting to anybody so that we can stay alive. It's like the drowning scene in Lost. Remember near the end where they all tragically died in the submarine or something? They're all panicking, going under, and they're still trying to touch, kiss, and communicate as they drown together. That's what why everybody's staring at the chip body. It's actually post-chip body, but everybody's trying to hoik up the chip body, keep it afloat during Web 2.0. That all collapsed a few years ago, and an iron came in as the new glue.
Oh.
Yeah, everybody likes the way Susanna talks. They like the way she laughs. So, Katie, back to these leaden, slow insights of who you're reading. But they're good, interesting for the time. We get a figure-ground insight from the article.
Mm-hmm.
As it tries to figure out the figure-ground of X-Files.
Right. And I'm going to get into how the show is cool in a minute, but she does make two more interesting points. She says, at present, with television, the acknowledgeable subliminal ground of middle-class life, the computer and the internet are becoming the new cool media, provoking us in that psychic and social disturbance that was once created by the TV image. She does bring it up.
Right. Now, she's forgetting that the internet, Web 1.0, is also hot media because people are looking for particular literate categories of answer. They want the suppressed files, the suppressed documents. You see? So
right,
she's missing that the play of both.
In 1996, there was no Web 2.0 yet. People barely had email.
That's right. I'm talking about Web 1.0. Web 1.0
right.
was you
oh,
get on
right.
and find literate information. There was a
right.
couple of McLuhanites like Robert Logan who said, oh, boy, the internet is getting people back to reading again. And that is,
right.
if you look at my article on the five schools of media ecology, the diasporic school, School 4, made up of Neil Postman, De Kirchhoff, Logan, Bruce Powell, couple others, they are trying to retrieve humanist values, and they're panicked in the 70s, 80s, 90s, but then they celebrate the literate aspect, the apparent hot part of the internet, which is not really what it's about, but it appears to be. So she is missing the interplay of hot and cool in the internet, which means it's tactility squared, because the interplay of hot, cool, and kinetic and smell is tactility. So, anyways, but at least she was writing about it and mentioning when nobody cared about the importance of McLuhan.
Right. And then she's talking about how the content of the X-Files and the actors who were unknown at the time, it's David Duchovny and what's her face? I can't remember her name, the redhead.
Ginger
anyway.
Or something? Ginger? Ginger.
No, she's got red
Jillian.
Hair.
Jillian.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Jillian.
Yeah.
Jillian.
Yeah, I'm sure it's in her book too. But that's cute. You were calling her Ginger because she's got the red hair. How they were virtually unknown too, so they could be projected upon.
Yeah,
and very cool people, and platonic relationship too, which is
Cyber sex. I mean, not information sex, not chemical body sex.
Right, right.
Which Roxy was announcing on the chat forum. Now there's Roxy's anticipating that. You know, an hour ago, she was declaring her cyber sex interest on the chat forum while everybody
else was trying
to get drunk.
Roxy's one of the sexiest chicks I've ever seen. So
yeah, well, there's probably a hidden ground. There's probably the sensory profile. See, here's how McLuhan would look at it. Okay, if Roxy suddenly became a figure and celebrity, you'd say, okay, what is in the Mexican makeup that appeals to today? And that would be the ayahuasca fad, the Mexican desert, all that stuff we associate with, I guess, Carlos Castaneda and the Central American imagery. That would be contained in Roxy of Berlin.
Yeah, plus she's
she
straight up
big.
Hot.
No. Nobody's straight up hot.
Beautiful lips, and yeah, she is. Her chemical body's hot.
Well, that's straight up parts, and you're being an American. Remember, Mark McLuhan criticized the American in Mechanical Bride. The American looks at parts of the body.
Right.
You know, look,
right.
Great legs, great ass, great tits, great lips.
Right.
The Mexicans don't look at the body that way. As a matter of fact, Roxy was telling me that she's into, it's a great costuming tradition in her culture, and that's why she photographs herself that way. The costuming image she puts on herself. But let's not get distracted. Go ahead.
No, but I do want to tie that in with, what's the one, I'm lost, I can't remember what it is, but what's the one little dealio where every culture has a way that they say something that's idiomatic? And it's
did you say the TV show Lost? I assume you didn't, but I heard Lost. You're talking about page 136 of Cliched Archetype. That's a very important page.
Tell me what it
page.
Says. Yeah, tell me what it is again.
Every statement that gives a sense of total command or total plenary awareness, mastery. So the British say, I know it like the back of my hand.
Right.
The Spanish say, I know it like
my pocket.
Yeah, the culture has a certain sensory bias, and the sentence of mastery reflects the sensory bias.
Mm-hmm.
That's
what
eight of them. Yeah, eight of them.
And that what you just said about the way Americans see the body versus other cultures reminded me of that, page 136
Cliched
Archetype. I know it's not completely related, but they're similar. It's a pattern.
Now, here's the thing about the title, X-Files. If there's nothing more literate or bureaucratic than the word files, F-I-L-E-S. I mean, that's what people used to in the 60s, 70s. They had jobs in the white-collar world dealing with files and filing cabinets. So X-Files means unknown files, the mystery files, which is what Web 1.0 was going to bring out on a mass level in 95. This show actually predicts the internet mania of Web 1.0. Right in there, X-Files. That's what's coming. That's a conspiracy meme that will be the cliche idea that's going on in Web 1.0. And that's what I was doing in the 90s. Not just conspiracy, but a lot of, I'm in the 80s at CKLN. So that's why people thought X-Files was about my show. Because it was releasing, hidden information. Now there was a slight bit of internet in 93. So it's interesting, the directors, how much would they admit or not, or even understand, that they were anticipating what was coming with the title?
Good question.
And then, but the thing is that they were having the characteristics of the TV landscape. That's what your author is noticing. But they're not noticing what aspects of the chip body are in X-Files. It's more cool, iconic TV impressions that she's saying. Maybe you can find another sentence that goes further.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go in linear order. There's only, this is like a 10-page article. We're on page 6. So we'll finish up. I'm not going to glance around and look for that, if that's okay.
Could the title be a play on the mathematical equation solving for X?
Yeah, the number is tactile. Yeah, it's the big integral number, right? The interval number. So let X... And, you'll look at it. I think I have big X on the fifth, on the Dobbstown part of my tiny note chart. I use the X. But yes, the total participation in X. See, that's where you can participate into the mystery of what X is.
Mm.
That's involving. That's integral.
Then she goes on and says, "The X Files literalizes coolness, making what Arthur Croker calls the inner structural code of the technological experience an element of its content, as well as its electronic form." So it sounds like she's essentially saying here that the message is the medium.
Yes, but she's saying it's the cool medium, the TV medium. I don't get that last point. What is she saying is cool? Why is it cool?
Because, let me read the whole paragraph so you can hear it in context. "It is therefore hardly surprising to find the X-Files, like many other televisually oriented programs, often described as movie-like, or to realize that many movies scarcely signify as theatrical releases, but as television shows, which, through video, they eventually become. What I'm claiming then is also paradoxical, that even though The X-Files is movie-like formally and stylistically, it is also chosen to remain cool in the McLuhan-esque sense. The X-Files literalizes coolness, making what Arthur Croker calls the inner structural code of the technological experience an element of its content as well as its electronic form." When we drill into The X-Files...
Hold it. That's where Croker could be a little more specific, using McLuhan's point. It's the TV landscape that is the content and the code, but it's not the code that's the hidden environment that's causing the old TV code to be seen as figure. And also, the fact she says it has movie and TV, she's picking up on the tactile interplay of all the previous analog media. There'd be newspaper in there, there'd be radio, all these different things. It's a radio paranoia that the thing is about, because that's the Orson Welles' Mars Invasion of 1938, the famous broadcast. So the Internet has all previous analog media in it. She's just noticing a little bit the movie and a little bit of the cool TV.
Mm-hmm. So she's starting out, but not taking that all the way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's just accepting what he's saying and beginning to learn what McLuhan is saying, but she doesn't have the dexterity with McLuhan that I was saying back then on the radio. I had great command of the McLuhan subtleties. And at that time, if I encountered her, and we were on the radio together, I would be saying stuff like this to her. And she would find it very interesting and challenging, but she would not be able to write it because, academia is slow. They have to have... She's doing all this just to show that TV is an effect. And it's also, it's a post-McLuhan era. And she's slow enough, academia can now say, yes, I better reassess McLuhan. But McLuhan is obsolete in the mid-90s when she's doing this. Is really obsolete. Matter of fact, Croker himself is better on Web 1.0 than anything McLuhan wrote.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get into how the show is cool. Do we want to continue or do we want to bring somebody else?
What are her examples?
Okay, so one of the best-known features of The X-Files is the degree of audience involvement and participation that the show's elliptical yet serial narrative structure fosters. The first McLuhan probe I employ, therefore, is that the cool TV medium promotes depth structures in art and entertainment alike and creates audience involvement in depth as well. By withholding plot and character information from audiences for weeks or even months at a time, slowly building out pieces to a puzzle that grows larger with each episode, The X-Files forces depth participation to the surface. The murky visual design of the show, its strange colors and expressionist lighting also force us to participate in creating sense from what we often cannot actually see.
Okay, we can say it's enough. Edgar Allan Poe was doing all this when he invented detective fiction almost 200 years before. And now I realize what's going on here. This academic, what's her name?
Her name is Adrian. Adrian.
Is the voice of the Android meme celebrating McLuhan like The Wired was. This is the Android meme pretending they're media analysts to look human. And they know the humans haven't figured out McLuhan, so they can look enticing by doing McLuhan. This is totally the Android meme faking interest in media. She, Adrian, I pronounce her an agent of the Android meme in a huge subliminal way. Because she's pointing out what, she's projecting what was going on in radio and newspapers, the whole detective mode, the involvement of the detective mode, which McLuhan talks a bit about in Mechanical Bride, is she thinks it's just arriving now with X-Files. No, X-Files is the Android meme replay. It's actually the after image of the Android meme, because the Android meme...
It started with Da Vinci.
Yes, yeah. Well, Da Vinci didn't invent detective.
Da Vinci to home.
Da Vinci what?
Da Vinci to home. To Holmes, Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right, the Holmes.
But
Holmes is the beginning, but Holmes comes from Poe. Poe invented the detective story, and that's an evolving thing, and that's why all the TV shows and radio shows of the 20th century were largely centered around detectives and journalism. It's very participatory. But I'm getting now that you have to understand the Android meme as hidden ground has stopped in 90. And then I say the popularization of the Android meme in the chip body level in the 90s is the after image of the Android meme. This is a retrograde after image article. And that shows you how academia is something to be seriously avoided. So, Adrian, become a regular subscriber to when you send her this stuff to her, when Ed Long excerpts her, let's see if she has the guts to come on and encounter the real X-Files.
I would love that. It'd be cool.
Yeah.
I'll invite her.
And, you know, she could say, oh, this is an aggressive guy, blah, blah, blah. No, who gives a fuck? We're not aggressive. We're passionate. And you can come in
right.
with any angle, any surprise you got, Adrian. And we will win. We've got Ion on here. So, you know, just accept your loss and enjoy the benefits of accepting and merging with that. So, and we
right.
welcome your participation, Adrian. But we're not going to have any more of your article. Your article, I just realized, is it's warmed over cheese from the Android meme vomit. Oh, it's good for you guys. Yes, I mean,
definitely, I mean, perfect for me right now, learning this craft.
Yes.
Perfect. So
well, you're trying to fit into the past. You're trying to write a TV show.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
We'll see if it's fine. We'll see. You know, let's not get too excited about your own joy.
It could die any day, too. I mean, whatever.
Yeah,
not attached.
Yeah. Did I hear you say that you're going to dump? You don't want to go back to writing a novel? Did I hear you say that half an hour ago?
Yep, I'm done. Uh-oh. I'm done.
No. Don't, that's where you get fooled. You're being specialized. Don't get specialized. You'll want to write a novel later.
Gosh. You think?
Yeah, you're trying to. You're being a literate person looking for a niche to realize yourself in. That's the big mistake under
probably.
Android meme conditions.
I just want to be done eventually, but I'll never be done.
No, never going to be done. You're never going to be done.
I know. And the insomnia, not insomnia, but I'm sleeping less and less and less.
See, because you're getting specialized. You're losing your slack as you get towards the elusive goal of success. And,
no, but it's not that kind of insomnia. It's more like I
Oh, like my insomnia.
Like,
I don't even
I'm just excited. I'm, like, it's just.
You don't, yeah, you don't need to sleep. It's not insomnia.
No.
Forget that word. You
no,
don't
not.
Need energy. Yeah, you
I
don't
so
need the rest.
I was so afraid of that it would happen, but I'm like awake and I'm just ready to go because it's fun. But that's what
okay,
been a
well,
couple
that's,
days.
That's...
I might crash. Anyway, enough about me. How boring.
Yeah, enough about you. Thanks a lot for your great introduction there for a good class. Now I'm going to unmute everybody.